Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, a little bit of front matter. First off, Estron's debut album, which I don't remember the name of, it's a long title. I think it's You Say I'm Too Much, I Say You're Not Enough, I think that's the title. Will be out on October 5th, tomorrow as this episode goes. No, I'm sorry, it came out on October 5th, 2 days from now as we're recording this, a few days ago as you're watching this, so...
It will then be now.
Definitely worth checking out. I will report back next week to let you know if it's worth reviewing, if it's different enough from the stuff we've already talked about. Speaking of upcoming albums, MC Fernalot's upcoming album, Net Split, or the Fathomless Heartbreak of Online Itself, is available for pre-order on Bandcamp, where you can also listen to selected tracks, and Square Up, where you can buy the CD. The album will officially be released on December 4th. Links to it all can be found on Frontalot's Twitter at @MC_Frontalot.
It's been, this year has just been insane for new music. I mean, it feels like every time I turn around, somebody, an artist I like, is released to do work. It's like, okay.
Bandmade released one earlier this year, and they just released the short version of a new video. They're being used in an anime. They released as the final closing song in an anime, and they released the version that's being used in the anime. I also suspect that's a sign that they're doing another February release, so yeah, or even into early next year. But Fernalot's album is a concept album.
Okay.
About complaining about the internet. The tracks are interesting.
Like the album we just reviewed last week. But Metric just came out with a new album. Who else? There's just Alice in Chains, the beautiful album they just put out a couple weeks ago. You keep thinking they're done, but they just keep putting out albums. You're like, wow, you know. It's kind of it's just their thing, and they're not eclectic, but they just keep moving and doing their sound. So it's very strange that they can just consistently produce. Well,
if you're that consistent, because Bandmade has done the same thing. They've put out an album. Yeah. The last three albums have been on a yearly basis, assuming I'm right about the next one. And it's because they have a very particular sound, and it's, you know, there's not a lot of, there's a little experimentation, but not a lot. I'm guessing it's probably the same for Arcade Fire.
Well, this is Alice. They've now put out as many full-length albums post-Lane as they had with Lane. The only difference are the two EPs they did with Lane, Sap, and Jar of Flies. But
yeah, and Alice does have a very particular sound. Although I am curious, I should dip into some of the newer stuff because Lane was such a pivotal part of their sound. I'm curious to see how they sound without them.
Well, the thing is, now Cantrell sings more, so it still sounds very similar to the old stuff because Cantrell was harmonizing with Lane,
and he sang the occasionally some songs. He sang almost entirely himself.
Yeah, especially the last album they did, because Lane was not there all the time.
Heaven Beside You is almost entirely Cantrell, except Lane comes in a little bit on the choruses.
That grind you're thinking. Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
But
I think
and besides you is all Cantrell. And one final thing, in reference to last week's episode, which is probably why I was thinking about Arcade Fire, Ed Dyer commented on my post about last week's episode on Facebook saying, listening to songs from Everything Now, I didn't care much care for the title track. Creature Comfort was the best on was the best from the album, but not going on my Spotify playlist. And I just commented that, like I said last week, we don't deserve love was my pick for my playlist because,
you know,
it's the one that it didn't sound like a pastiche to me.
Yeah, it summed up the album in the end. It was everything stripped away. The rest of the album is a facade. I mean, it's purposely so, you know, that we're distracting ourselves and we're just drowning in all of this shit.
Right.
And We Don't Deserve Love is all of that is removed and we're just yikes.
And now finally on to this week's album, which is from 1967, Surrealistic Pillow by Jefferson Airplane. This is a tribute to the late great Marty Balin, who passed away earlier in the week. Jefferson Airplane was a rock band from San Francisco, California. They were one of the pioneering bands of psychedelic rock. They formed in 1965 by, they were formed in 65 by Marty Balin and Paul Kantner. They were one of the bands that really defined the San Francisco sound, and they were headliners at all three of the most famous American rock festivals of the 60s, Monterey, Woodstock, and Altamont, as well as the first Isle of Wight festival in England in 68. They were inducted into the Hall of Fame in 96 and were presented with a Grammy for Lifetime Achievement in 2016. Surrealistic Pillow is the band's second album and their first with vocalist Grace Slick and drummer Spencer Dryden, which is why I chose it. It was released on February 1st, 1967, produced by Rick Gerard, and features Marty Balin on vocals and guitar, Jack Cassidy on bass guitar and rhythm guitar, Spencer Dryden on drums and percussion, Paul Kantner on rhythm guitar and vocals, Jorma Kaukonen on lead guitar and vocals. I've been practicing his last name. Grace Slick on vocals, piano, organ, and recorder. I did not know she played any instruments before.
Me neither.
Skip Spence, their previous drummer, drums on Don't Slip Away, Come Up the Years, and a guest appearance by Jerry Garcia on guitar on Today, Coming Back to Me, and Plastic Fantastic Lover. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into the episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description you'll find links to Surrealistic Pillow on Spotify and YouTube. Now on to the tracks. Track one, She Has Funny Cars. Love that title.
Yeah, you know, I can't say, I mean, aside from the two obvious songs on this album, you know, I can't say I'm familiar with the rest of it.
Yeah, I didn't know any of the other songs before walking into this, except, of course, Somebody to Love and White Rabbit.
Yeah, there's the obvious ones. Right. Of course, the comment for Somebody to Love is when Airplane Starship have a hit, you hear it until the end of time.
Yeah. And oddly, I think White Rabbit I've heard more. Back to She Has Funny Cars.
Yes.
The rest of it was a very nice surprise because the two songs everybody knows are outliers in a sense.
You begin with like this little hand jive.
it's what's technically called a son clave, better known as a Bo Diddley beat.
Okay.
And I have to complain about this. And again, I'll say it once and be done with it. It must be a late 60s thing because the drums were on the left again. I hate pan drums. I hate when the snare and the kick are panned, when the entire kit is panned to one side.
They were still just learning how to do shit, really.
And this was a year before the Aretha before Lady Soul, so maybe it was a thing at the time. But I will say that the kind of folky rhythm of the melody contrasts nicely with that beat.
Right. Yeah. When I start hearing a hand jive, I'm kind of like, oh boy, you know. But this gets interesting really quickly. I mean, as soon as you hear the interplay harmony with Grace coming in, you're just like, oh. And
it's very straightforward, folky kind of that style of folk where they try to fit too many words in.
Like, these guys are good.
Yeah, against that Bo Diddley beat, and the harmonies on the chorus are amazing.
Right. Right.
And as much as I'm complaining about the drums, and just that aspect of the drums, Spencer Dryden is an amazing player. I loved how tight him and Jack Cassidy were throughout the album. And it's not something I comment often, but Spencer Dryden's a jazz player, and Jack Cassidy has this really nice minimalistic bass style, and they lock in perfectly. And I loved how he kind of dances around the verses and the solos at the end.
Yeah. And the outro is really cool in this too, that guitar just as playing as the outro.
Yeah, they do that a lot. They take a guitar solo at the end of the song. This is one of my favorites. On to track two, Somebody to Love. This is a classic.
I don't know if I'm familiar.
I'm just kidding.
Who hasn't heard this fucking suck?
You know, love the lead guitar work. Jorma Kaukonen he's very well respected among guitar players. But he's not one of those players who the general public really knows.
I wasn't aware this was written by Grace's brother.
Yeah, yeah. Who she was in a band with previously called The Great Society.
But just the track listing.
No, it's not his brother. No, not her brother. I just realized it was Jerry Slick. It was her brother-in-law or her former brother-in-law.
All right.
Her former husband's brother.
That was Darby Slick.
Darby Slick was the husband, I think.
Okay.
One of the two. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah. This is a classic, probably my favorite song from the band. Great solo. I got to say, obviously, I prefer the mono version.
I mean, it really pushes her voice in the best way imaginable, you know, compared to other songs on the album. Mm-hmm. This really just shows off what she can do. And I mean, just looking at the track listing on this album kind of shows the trouble the band was in. Like, they didn't really realize what they had, you know. I mean, this is good in this spot, you know. You want to, you've done the intro, now it's time to kick it in. I guess more on that later with White Rabbit.
Okay, so you're taking issue with the track list, the order of the tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little, I think it's a little, given that most of it is very folky, it's kind of odd to have this big rock song in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd one out. I would maybe have ended the album with it.
Maybe with White Rabbit.
Or one of the two, or another one just for lyric reasons, but I'll get to that. But it is kind of just odd to have this big rock song in the middle of all these folk songs.
Yeah.
On to track three, My Best Friend.
Are you sure this isn't the Jellyfish song?
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I have a kind of a similar reaction. I wasn't that into it. I mean, I was paying attention to the lyrics to see if there was any kind of joke in there. There wasn't. I could notice.
I like how the tempo shifts in it, yeah, but other than that, there isn't much that really grabs you.
Kind of a country song, some nice lead guitar work.
Yeah.
Yorma kind of switches sides a lot, which is interesting. Sometimes he's on the right, sometimes he's on the left. I do like how the beat kind of picks up through the chorus and then kind of gets back to this kind of mid-tempo country thing. On to track four, Today.
I did not realize they were an influence on Alice in Chains until I heard this.
Yeah, that's emotional.
This could easily be an Alice in Chains song if it wasn't talking about loving someone. So, which Cantrell would never, right?
Of course. And I looked at the melody is very English folk with this kind of rock background. Love the heavy reverb on the drums.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Drums are very quiet in the mix and just have a ton of reverb on them. So they're almost more of a pulse than a drum kit. Of course, more great harmonies, I'm going to be saying that a lot.
Yeah. Well, especially on this one. I think this one, the harmonies may be the best on the whole album here, I think.
Mm. Another one of my favorites. I mean, commenting on the harmonies in Yorma's lead guitar work is just going to be a recurring theme for me. On to track four, Coming Back to Me. Yorma changes sides again. Acoustic guitar and recorder arrangement. That's really all there is in the song. I think there's a little bass toward the end, but it's just vocals, two guitars, and recorder. Again, had no idea Grace Slick played an instrument. She's actually quite good.
Nice is a good word to describe it. I mean, it's a nice little ballad. Maybe could have been a little shorter.
But Balin's vocal is amazing.
Yeah.
He was incredibly underrated as a singer.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have a huge range. He didn't have a big dynamic voice, but he was just had a great tone. He was very listenable. Another favorite for me. I think this was the one I put on my playlist.
This is my favorite. Odd way to end side one, honestly.
Yeah. It's a nice little ballad. Again, they were started by Balin and Kantner were folk musicians.
Right.
They started off as a folk band who found a blues guitar player. And this, rock rhythm section, actually at this point, a jazz drummer and a rock bass player. So they were this kind of weird conglomeration of styles. On to track six, speaking of which, 3/5 of a mile in 10 seconds. A couple of interesting titles there. This one is kind of Stax meets blues.
It's almost like a hard rock song, really, especially if you consider the time. Where hard rock was in 67.
Yeah, yeah. Hendrix and Blue Cheer and that sort of thing.
This is pretty hard for the time.
Yeah. But again, great folk harmonies. And it really kind of embodies folk rock because you've got these great harmonized vocals with this rock background. I never really understood what folk rock was until I heard this song, honestly. Another great solo. Again, Cassidy and Dryden were amazingly tight. They just played off of each other beautifully. On to track 7, another fascinating title that I do not understand. ECBA-25. And this one starts off with the lyrics, "It's time we walked away." This is the one I was saying, and maybe this should have ended it.
Oh, maybe.
Great bass. There's actually a bass solo, or no, great bass line during the solo, I should say. Yeah. Kind of does step out a little bit on its own. More great harmonies. And I've noticed that the singles were slick sung rock songs.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing else. She doesn't really stand out in the other stuff.
Right.
You know, she sings a line here and there. She mostly just harmonizes, except for those two songs. Yeah, pan drums again must have been a 60s thing.
I mean, so, you know, this one's a pop, more of a pop song than a rock song like the last one.
Yeah. On to track 8, How Do You Feel? More recorder on this one. Love that. Very folky. Guitars seem to be getting louder during the verses and into the chorus, which is interesting. Like the instrumentation gets louder and then gets quieter again.
And like the harmony is good, but it's just not as good as the earlier harmonies. The harmonies here feel very typical 60s harmonies, you know, that you'd get. And I'm trying to think, this had to have been after Mamas and Papas.
Yeah. They were an influence, certainly. There's also a little short acoustic guitar solo on one side that's not, you know, the main lead guitar. I'm wondering if that was Balin or Kantner. I think Kantner was more experienced as a guitarist. You know, he was more of the rhythm guitarist, so probably.
Yeah.
Nice a cappella ending. All the instruments just cut out in the end on vocals. On to track 9, Embryonic Journey. This is the one that Yorma is remembered for. It's just it's a solo acoustic guitar piece that mixes country and blues and ragtime and some amazing fingerstyle playing. Like I said, he deserves more respect than he gets. Gets kind of nicely aggressive toward the end. I could geek out, but most people aren't guitar players, so I'll just leave it there. On to track 10, the other big one, White Rabbit.
This should have been the end of the album, honestly.
Yeah, Feed Your Head. Yeah, that big Feed Your Head, yeah. I agree. Love how in the verses the chords just go up a half step. Like they go up one white key to a black key, you know, a sharp, which just gives it this great tension.
Well, right, and this that whole military drumming
best going on in the military beat and pop music of all.
Exactly, you're just and kind of like there's so much tension here.
It's this half step increase with this military beat and the bass doing what basically amounts to a tango.
Yes,
dump bump ba da dump over this military beat. It's just this fascinating rhythm, and the bass line is just classic.
Because the tension doesn't necessarily fit with what she's singing about.
Oh, yeah.
But if you put it in that context, then it's kind of like declaring a war on normalcy or whatever you want to call it. You know, I mean,
for those who don't know it, for the three people who may not have heard the song, this is why people think Alice in Wonderland is about drugs. I think maybe, I don't even know if that's who predated the song.
I mean, I think she chose it for a good reason, Alice in Wonderland of the Imagery. I mean,
it wasn't actually. It was about the government in England at the time. There's a lot of reason to think it might have been about
I thought that. There was a couple of things. Carol, I mean, he was really into a young girl.
Okay. There might have been more to it as well.
Yeah. And I think he was at least under the influence when he wrote a lot of it.
Possibly.
So it wasn't about it necessarily, but I think it was influencing it.
Very possibly. This is directly about one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small.
Yeah.
It's basically talking about how the older generation doesn't understand why we do drugs.
Right. And, you know, the ones that your mother give you don't do anything at all.
Yeah. And to me, this is Grace Slick's defining vocal.
Yeah.
This is the one that really, where she really showed what she does.
I don't know. I mean, well, I guess it's in a much more subtle way than Somebody to Love.
Yeah.
It's Somebody to Love is just, it's all out there. Whereas this
one gets properly weird at times.
This, you know, escalates.
This escalates, and that weird vibrato that she brings in.
Yeah.
Feed Your Head. It's just, this to me, this is more, I mean, you could argue that the vocal on Somebody to Love is stronger, but this is emblematic of Graceless voice.
Yeah.
To me. And finally,
so I'll put this as my track on my list. Why the fuck not?
And on to finally track 11, Plastic Fantastic Lover. Fitting for the tribute, we're ending on a Marty Balin song. Love the great bluesy lead guitar. And this is just a straightforward blues rock song.
Yeah, this is a middle track, not a closer.
Love the thick but really well-defined bass tone. Jack Cassidy was a very simple player. I mean, his bass line on White Rabbit was two notes. But he had such an amazing tone and taste, and he was one of the greats of all time, who again doesn't get the recognition he deserves. And just as a final note on the album, this band really did get worse each time the name changed.
Well, this last song, I mean, I kind of feel the vocals had this very Dylan kind of
effect. I like that it was almost a spoken vocal.
So, I mean, I don't know.
It fit the song. And it was a departure from a lot of his other vocals on the album.
Yeah.
So, would you recommend it?
I would, actually. I mean, there are some hidden gems here that, were nice introductions for me. And, of course, you have two just absolute classics that deserve the hype, you know?
I absolutely recommend it. It's just a great mix of folk, rock, blues, country, probably several other genres I didn't pick out.
I think the first side is definitely stronger than the second side.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the second side kind of, I mean, between DCBA, between 3/5 of a Mile and 10 Seconds and White Rabbit.
I would say the Embryonic Journey, because that guitar solo is brilliant. But I didn't think it was possible as a child of the 80s, but really, seeing what they were in their prime, because again, I only really knew those two songs, it made me hate Starship even more.
Well, right. In fact, my coworkers and I had a conversation very recently about how awful Starship is, and an abomination.
I briefly considered suggesting Knee Deep in Hoopla as a two-parter, but I couldn't put either of us through that.
I mean, because we'll still hear We Built This City.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, it's not that it was just played too often. It wasn't that good a song.
No. On Spotify, because I listen to a lot of 80s stuff, they've recommended one of their best of albums. And it's a picture of the four of them. This is Starship Era.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious in all of their faces that they were just there for the money. And these four different expressions, it all screamed, "I'm only here for the money." And I even went back to Nuclear Furniture, the album, the last Jefferson Starship album, or the last before they switched over to Starship, because they actually did one or two more with Kantner and Balin as Jefferson Starship.
It's very weird, the history of it, just how fluid the lineup really is.
Yeah. A lot of people have been in the band.
And have come back to the band and have left the band and have come back.
Now that Kantner and Balin are gone, David Freiberg, who was the rhythm guitarist during the Starship era, Jefferson Starship era, is now leading the band and singing most of it. Even the Nuclear Furniture, which I like a couple of songs it has No Way Out and Find Your Way Back, both of which I like.
Okay, I remember those.
The rest of it is really weak.
Yeah.
It's a pop album. And I blame, what was his name? Peter Wolf. Not the singer from Jay Giles, a producer named Peter Wolf. Not the Jay Giles singer. Another Peter Wolf was their producer in that era.
Bunch of people from the Philadelphia area will be coming looking for you.
And he wrote a lot of the songs for them, and he was kind of the one responsible for Starship. And they were so brilliant in their heyday. And to see what they became, even in the Jefferson Starship era has some good stuff.
Well, I'm curious about the rest of the Jefferson Airplane era because they put out a lot more than just this.
Yeah.
And yet, I think those are the only two songs I really know of Jefferson Airplane.
And they're the two that are outliers. They're the rock songs.
Yeah.
which I think is why they get remembered. Because, I mean, none of this was terribly psychedelic, even though they're considered like
that is one very of the true
of psychedelia.
I mean, and I think we went on about the what happened in 67 in the Days of Future Past episode, yes, being just the ginormous amount of music that was released within that span of 12 months. I didn't realize the Doors put out two albums.
Wow. Two albums in the same year is a hell of an accomplishment.
They put out...
they did too. Airplane did too. They put out another one the same year.
They put out their debut album came out in like first week of January, and then they put out Strange Days by like September of 67.
Nice.
So like 8 months apart.
But you know, I would say all due respect to Airplane, they were great, at least what I've heard now. But I would put them more in with the Birds and you know the Beatles and more of that elite Beatles. And more of that folk rock movement, Mamas and Papas, more so than in the psychedelic area.
Well, right, because also Piper at the Gates of Dawn came out, and if you want to listen to a psychedelic album, the British really had it down better.
I mean, the Dead really had it down too, but they were more loose, more jazz, more folk. The psychedelic angle, the British really nailed that. Anyway, that's it for Surrealistic Pillow by Jefferson Airplane. There won't be an episode next week. We were going to record more Lane, but then I remembered that Doctor Who was premiering this weekend.
TV show has to come back, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the season premiere of Doctor Who. That'll be out on the Saturday after you're watching this, if you're watching it when it comes out.
When will then be now?
Mm-hmm. And... until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing Blows Against the Empire by Paul Kantner and Jefferson Starship. This is the first name of... This is an impromptu two-parter because it's the first album to use the Jefferson Starship name even before they officially became Jefferson Starship. And it is a hippie sci-fi concept album. One of the tracks is really just pure noise. I can't wait to get to it. Anyway, that's in 2 weeks. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life.
There you are.